Welcome to Deadly Departed, the do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication. This show discusses all aspects of afterlife communication, grief and grieving, the paranormal, and of course, parapsychology. There's real stories, scientific discussion, and most of all, real learning from paranormal experts and researchers. Here's your host, author of Deadly Departed, renowned evidential medium and spirit interventionist, Jock Brokaas.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world, wherever you are listening to this, this is Jock here from Deadly Departed. Thank you for joining me once again. And also, if this is the first time that you have joined us, then stick around for this podcast, whether you're listening or whether you're viewing on YouTube, because this one is going to be a humdinger, especially if you're a skeptic. So my guest today is the author of PSI Wars, which is an outstanding book that I wholeheartedly support. But not only that, Craig Wheeler, who is the author, is also now one of our team in PDN, and today we're talking about his work within the scientific community, the academic community, and how he is the voice for the PSI world against those skeptics out there. So, Craig Wheeler, welcome to Deadly Departed, my friend. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I have a couple of very minor corrections to make. It's Wheeler.
Go for it. Wheeler.
Yes, okay. I don't know. I spell it that way just to mess people up, but it looks like Wheeler, but it's pronounced Wheeler.
Right, so I'll remember that. It's interesting. Nobody can get my name right either.
I understand. All is forgiven.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay. So, how are you in beautiful California?
It's nice. We've been, of course, in California in the late summer, early fall, it's fire season. So we've had major fires going in several areas of California, and here in the Bay Area, it all depends on which way the wind is blowing, literally.
So you're on your toes. I mean, you're literally on your toes there, and you're kind of waiting at any given time that you could end up having to bunk out.
Well, to a certain extent, fires generally hit rural areas because that's where they get out of control. They start in very remote areas where the fire people, Cal Fire has trouble getting to it. And then they manage to get out of control before they have a chance to get on them. As you get closer to cities, the fires are spotted earlier and put out quicker. So for a large area like the greater Bay Area, there's really not much of a fire threat, but we get the smoke and we get a lot of it.
Yeah. God, that must be really hard to deal with, Craig, when you get so much smoke coming with the having to breathe. It must be quite unhealthy at times.
Well, as I said, it depends on which way the wind blows. There have been times this summer where the wind blew in such a way that the entire area got sucked in with smog and the air was very unhealthy to breathe. At that point, you have to shut all the doors and windows, turn on your air purifiers if you have them, and just wait it out. In our house, that's especially difficult because we designed the house to have to not need air conditioning. But this requires being able to open doors and windows and get a breeze going. So
it's,
when everything gets closed up, it gets brutally hot in here.
So you don't have any air conditioning now?
Normally, we don't need it. If houses are designed correctly, particularly in a Mediterranean climate zone where we don't have the high humidity and we have the ocean nearby for breezes, if you don't have to shut all the doors and windows, the movement of the air through the house is enough to keep it from being too hot.
Right. Okay. So anyway, let's get right into this. Craig, you know, Craig Wyler, if I've got that right, right now, Craig Wyler.
Yes.
Is that right? Let me just bring this up so people can see. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested in psychic phenomena, if you are interested in you know, perceptions that go beyond the material world, then this book is for you. Why? Because there's a battle going on, and we're going to talk about that at the moment, because there are many people that go against the grain of psychic phenomena. We have a problem trying to blend science and spirit together, and very few people, in fact, no one that I know of actually has stepped up, rather than on forums and fought their way through something, has never actually documented such an amazing coverage of everything that goes on in the PSI world and those of the skeptical world than Craig Wyler has done. And so, Craig, why did you write this book? Because, I mean, this is a massive compendium of all information. What gave you what snapped in you that made you write, I'm going to write this book, I'm going to stand up for what I believe is right?
Well, first of all, the most important part of this was that I had a story to tell. And that was the science controversy of 2013 between Rupert Sheldrake, Graham Hancock, and TED. TED is that video platform, for those who aren't familiar, that produces about 20-minute talks on a wide variety of subjects. And they have...
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I love actually listening to some of these talks. Yeah,
they're very well done, very highly polished. They managed to get the most out of their speakers. And Rupert Sheldrake was doing one of their satellite programs in Whitechapel, and he talked about the science, what they call the science delusion, which is that science is operating on a philosophical assumption of materialism. And he was arguing that we needed to expand that and start looking at whether those assumptions were correct. So in this particular speech, he was addressing that. And TED took the speech down and labeled it as pseudoscience. And this created an enormous controversy. Sheldrake is popular, and he's done a good job.
Oh, definitely. He's someone... Yeah, he's someone I respect a great deal.
He writes very clearly. He's made his points very clearly. He's in his own field of biology. He's well known for his accomplishments in biology. So he had every right to be there, basically. And the attacks on him were coming from the skeptical community. And it turned out, once I investigated, that TED was completely in the grips of the materialist atheists. Those are the only people that TED listened to when it came to science.
And you make that very clear in the book, actually, that there's no gray areas. I mean, from all your research, you're like, you know, this is clearly TED, as good as it is, was clearly controlled by that arm, if you like, that other factor.
Yeah, it stemmed from the leadership of Chris Anderson, and he basically put a lot of people in there who were the atheist materialist types. And the upshot of that was that TED listened to these people and then tried to do things in an open way. And the clash between these two things of, on the one hand, TED is trying to be a good organization. And on the other hand, TED is listening to crazy people. And the upshot of this was that this whole thing dragged out for like a month and a half, without any good resolution. And they ended up just taking Sheldrake's talk down and saying, okay, we're done. So they never...
No, you would think, why didn't they, Craig? I mean, after obviously, you know, going into the book, it's very clear that they were in the wrong. Why didn't they put their hands up and say, hey, you know, he is a respected, renowned scientist. His perception, whether you believe it or not, still has value, because let's face it, TED is all about have you got thoughts that change the world? Have you got thoughts that, you know, have you got a particular concept that you think should be learned out there that could change the face of humanity? So why didn't they see him as, well, yeah, this guy he should be there. We can put it back up again.
That would have been the best public relations thing that they could have done. The problem, and the problem was that Chris Anderson was locked into the atheist materialist point of view and could not be budged from it. A year later,
it's still the same as well, isn't it?
People tried to get him to turn this around. There was a fellow that went to TED headquarters in New York and had a small protest-ish thing outside of his offices to get him to talk to them about what he was doing. And his basic point of view, when they pinned him down, and by the way, kudos to Chris Anderson for engaging in the first place and also explicitly stating his point of view, that he said, well, until the main scientific community agrees that psychic ability is real, I'm not going along.
You know, it's interesting though, Craig, because since Rupert's talk was banned and had come out, there have been other talks since then. I would need to go back and remember their names, but I know there's been a talk on near-death experience. I know that there has been a talk on, I don't want to say exorcisms or anything like that, but there has been a talk on how spirits influence or how it happens in indigenous tribes, etc., by a filmmaker. So there have been talks out there that have bordered on the PSI intuitive level of things. So this is what I can't understand. If they have allowed that afterwards, I don't understand why they couldn't allow him back on even now. Because they've clearly got talks. I mean, you've got one of the doctors in New York who'd clearly talked about he sees dead people. And I can't remember his name. I need to go back to that. But was a fascinating talk. Now, that was after, I believe, and people, if I'm wrong, then you can feel free to write in and tell me I'm totally off my trolley. But it seems to me that they've still allowed talks that border on PSI since then. Why haven't they done anything else with Rupert? Why haven't they invited him back and said, hey, you could do a version of this in a different way?
Well, first of all, one of the things that I've noticed the most is that they tend to leave the skeptics, I'm talking about the materialist atheists, they tend to leave the paranormal alone, but they tend to go after the science, anything that challenges their science very vigorously. So if you have a ghost story, they're like, yeah, whatever. If you're saying, hey, we have published studies showing that precognition is real, they go, that's their trigger.
Yeah, you can imagine that is their trigger. It certainly is, because you have talks on there about psychosis and schizophrenia, which all border on maybe even spiritual intrusions. So there is talks on there, and it's interesting. So what made you? I mean, obviously Rupert never came out and wrote a book to disparage any of the skeptics or to, you know, stick up for himself or anything else, but you decided, why did you decide to take up that gauntlet?
Well, I had the story of TED to tell. So I used the story of this huge science controversy to bring out information that I had already gathered on skepticism, because as I'd begun to research that to write various articles on my blog, which very few people read, what I discovered was that there was a pattern to it, that this wasn't what people thought it was. normally when we think of skepticism, we think of people who are objective, are looking at all the data, and then applying reasonable scientific thought to whether it's real or not. That's what we think of skepticism to be. What I was discovering was that it's basically organizations guided by their own fundamentalist mindset and zealotry that were systematically pushing their own narrative, much like you would find for Stop the Steal or the Evangelicals, or, you know, pick any one of these particular types of group. They all operate in exactly the same way. It's all about PR. So I saw...
It's almost like it's online terrorism, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
I think terrorism is a strong word. I prefer zealotry because it is...
Okay.
It is nonviolent. And when you say terrorism, you tend to go towards, well, these people can be physically violent. And the answer for that, for the skeptics, is no, they're nonviolent, completely, utterly.
Yeah.
So what you're looking at...
Well, they do create terror in people's lives. Yeah. Okay, I will stand corrected, but I do think some of the guerrilla skeptics do create terror in people's lives, and that's why I've kind of labeled it that way. But yeah, I understand exactly where you come from. So it's fair to say that there is several different types of skeptical camps, because we do know of skeptics who are open skeptics, who are researchers. You know, we have many parapsychologists that have a skeptical perception of things, but they're willing to look in, they're willing to dive in. And then you have the other camps. Now, do you think it's a lot of people will label the skeptics all as one community, or do you think there should actually be maybe a different label? Maybe they're not called skeptics. I mean, we understand them called guerrilla skeptics, but there's clearly a division, Craig. What do you say to that?
Well, the most of the people that you will run into online are what has been termed pseudo-skeptics for a very long time. They're the zealots, that the atheist materialists pushing a point of view and being very black and white about it. No ambiguity whatsoever. That's what you will normally encounter. And if you try to divide them up, what you'll find is that the zealots will claim that title. You know, nobody wants to be the zealot.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be the open-minded skeptic, and they will all tell you that they're open-minded. But once you probe them, you find out that they're not.
Do you think there is a deep fear within that skeptical camp? Is there a fear for them to, I mean, we've heard this lots of times before, is there a fear of what they will find if they do dive into the data?
Yes. The psychic ability tends to create a great deal of fearfulness in people with fundamentalist points of view. And that's, if you're an evangelical, it's all about the psychic ability is associated completely with the devil. And if you're a skeptic, then psychic ability must not be real. So, you know, the fundamentalists are attacking it because they don't like it. It makes them deeply uncomfortable and afraid. And anytime you have fundamentalists, I think fundamentalists really about anything, they're operating from a place of deep fear.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I respect this, you know, Lloyd Auerbach as I do. And Lloyd is a skeptical, you know, he does have a skeptical mind, but he's a parapsychologist. He's been in parapsychology for over 40 odd years. And the man's knowledge is phenomenal. And I listened to a lecture he was talking about the other day. He does a live on Facebook, which, ladies and gentlemen, if you want any information, that I'll give you that in one of the comments. But Lloyd, I don't know if it was a question that was asked, but he said that it's interesting because a lot of these skeptics, that will totally deny everything or go against the grain or anyway are the same people that when no one's looking will go to them and say, okay, so here is my experience. Right. Here is what I experienced. Don't tell anybody, but you know, this is how what I experienced in this psychic phenomena. And they're quite open to it, but in the public they totally shoot it down. Why do you think that is? And is there any possibility that we can create a bridge between the two?
What you're talking about is extreme conformism. Okay. Yeah, that's a thing with fundamentalists. If you look at pretty much any fundamentalist, what they're trying to do is position themselves as the normal mainstream point of view. All of them. That we are, you know, we are the majority. We are the same people. There's lots of us. And this is our opinion. It's just another piece of the fundamentalist puzzle. Is they see themselves as being big part of the group, and they are they experience a lot of difficulty in doing anything that sets them apart from that group. They have a great deal of trouble separating themselves from that. People like you and I are just like, yeah, we're going to say what we think. And if you don't like it, shove it. And this is what we're used to, and this seems normal to us. But for some people, that is a position where they'll be in an extreme fear if they try to do that. So that's what.
And then they go and they try and push it down your throat and push it down everybody else's throat and keep continually trying to keep pushing.
Right. What they're doing is they're pushing it away from themselves.
Yeah, because they don't want to face it. It's like someone who's, you know, is fearful in their life. They don't want to actually face the fear. They'd rather attack someone else. So, you know, your book is full of lots of examples, Craig. But is there one particular example? I mean, we'll talk about, you know, Rupert's, you know, morphic resonance and Dean Radin's work. But is there any particular example that stands out for you as being the worst case other than the TED Talk? But another where, you know, one of the scientists has proven or given enough data and had meta-analysis done on the PSI, and it's leaning towards that this is real, but then the skeptics come out and all-out attack. Is there one particular case that you sticks in your mind that you can talk about?
Oh, yeah, that's easy. So there's a researcher, Daryl Bem, extremely well-regarded in the psychology field and well-versed in statistics. And he got a study published in a very highly regarded psychology magazine, psychology journal, I'm sorry. Very highly regarded. They reject something like 85% of the studies that are submitted to them. Yeah. Very, very strict guidelines. So he got his study published in there, and the precognition study, and the journal itself, they had trouble wrapping their heads around it because, of course, they were in the skeptical materialist camp. So now you had a study that was, you know, extremely published in an extremely highly regarded psychology magazine, another psychology journal, I'm sorry. Very, very important distinction there. So you had a spot where one of the skeptics' biggest objections that parapsychology is only published in small, unimportant journals, that objection had been resolved. Now it had been published in a very prestigious journal. Mm. So that one is particularly interesting by how everybody responded. First of all, the usual suspects did their own set of studies. Now, this would be Richard Weissman and Chris French and another fellow I can't remember, put together a study. And since they're basically skeptic lifers themselves, the study, to absolutely nobody's surprise, failed to replicate. And they published the crap out of that. they promoted the crap out of that so that everybody saw that they had failed to replicate. And this, you know, lots of magazine articles were written about the fact that they had failed the replication. But another thing came out of it, which was even more more batshit crazy, which was that the skeptics started to come to the conclusion that the whole way that the field of psychology operates must be wrong, because this study clearly followed all the rules of psychology. And since psychic ability must be absolutely impossible, then all of psychology must be broken. So basically,
yeah, and that's a big problem, because then you're talking of ripping apart what is now accepted as a social science.
Well, you're throwing out all of psychology to make one positive result go away.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, and he did end up publishing 90 replications later. But of course,
you know, it's interesting because they didn't seem to, as far as I know, they didn't exactly try to replicate it, and they only did one or two studies. They didn't actually do a number of studies to get the data and to you know, and then just, if it fails once, and this is what I find with the skeptical world, is if it fails once, that's it. And they don't take into any, anything to that may have changed, or environmental changes or something, or maybe they missed a step or whatever it is, but they just, if it fails once, that's it. Everything else must be wrong. They don't give it a chance to have replicable data from different tests or studies all over.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're just looking at one replication, that's not how science works. It just isn't. You take, when you're doing replications, you do a lot of them. And hopefully you have a lot of different people doing replications so that you have a lot of eyes on the original study. And from that, you take this group of studies and you create a meta-analysis, and you look at what the results were across all studies. So the fact that you had some replications where there was no effect doesn't really mean anything, because you're always going to have that when you have,
because there was meta-analysis. Behm did do meta-analysis. There was meta-analysis of his experiment from many different places, wasn't there?
There were several, yeah. I would say there were enough. Parapsychologists.
I'm glad that I was really hoping, Craig, that you brought this one up, because you wrote about this on PDN and you mentioned before that you hadn't, you know, it wasn't getting read, and I can assure you now is the article you wrote about that has been read thousands and thousands of times, and it's continually being read. So, you know, we're doing something right out there, and it's just one example, which is this of how this kind of doesn't have a fair voice. You know, the science doesn't have a fair voice, and especially when other people are replicating and getting good data. How can the skeptics say, well, you know, if there's been 10 replications and one failed, they're all failed, when maybe 7 or 8 replications actually were successful?
Well, they lie. That's really the blunt way to put it. In the case of Richard Weissman and Chris French, they had put out a call for studies, which is a standard thing to do, and they put a deadline on it, which is a non-standard thing to do. But even then, they had their 3 studies, which were all 3 of them very small, and then they had 2 other studies, which it turned out had positive results, which they rejected from their group. So they were cherry picking which studies they wanted to promote, which were unsurprisingly the ones where no result was found.
Hi there, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. If you have purchased Deadly Departed, it means a lot to me. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my work. And if you haven't bought Deadly Departed yet, then consider buying Deadly Departed. You can get it on Amazon, or you can get it in any bookstore, and you can show proof of purchase and join my closed group. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at any time at Spiritual Medium if you have a question, and I will answer it. Have a wonderful day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you once again. God bless. It's interesting because I listened to Rupert and Chris French debating at Oxford University just recently, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And in fact, I don't know a great deal. I've not listened a great deal to Richard Wiseman. I've not looked at any of his studies or anything else, but certainly I have a number of times listened to both them and Chris French. And, you know, I had respect for Chris French as I have respect for Rupert. And it seemed that when they were debating, he did seem to be open to further collaboration, because they mentioned that at the end of the talk, that they were going to collaborate further. And what was interesting was Rupert's very polished, as you know, as we've spoken about before, and his answer, he had an answer for everything, as you know, as did Chris did. But there was no clear winner in this. It was a case of, okay, so we need further study, we need further analysis, and they're willing to do it. Now, obviously, it didn't seem that Chris was being as pseudo-skeptical as maybe what some people make out. It seemed that he did have an open, I don't want to say an open mind, because that's maybe wrong, but he was willing to look at things. Do you think we can have a debate between both camps and eventually find, for want of a better term, a happy medium?
No, I don't.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is then?
The reason I don't think you can have a good debate is that this is, on the one hand, you're talking about people whose minds will never change ever. You have to understand, there are replicated studies for telepathy. There are replicated studies for psychokinesis. There are replicated studies for precognition. Mm-hmm. There were the replicated staring studies. And then there's a whole host of other studies. Reiki's been replicated many times. For anybody who might not know what Reiki is, it's a healing technique.
Yeah, Reiki healing. Yes absolutely.
So you have all these replicated studies, plus you have a ton of satellite studies which have not received a lot of replication themselves, but taken as a whole, there's all these positive results all over the place. And then you have like what, half the world having psychic experiences? So, on what planet do you have all this evidence and then still have reasonable doubt?
You know, it's interesting because I also say as well, Craig, is that, and it goes back to the analogy of Christopher Columbus, when you had all the greatest minds at that time saying, you know, you're absolutely crazy, the earth is flat, and you're going to fall off the end of it, and, you know, and lo and behold, they find that, and it's a very simple analogy, they find that the world is actually round. Now, I know there is some kind of conspiracy theory out there, and I came across this the other day when I was asked a question, that there actually are some people out there that consider the world as flat. So, you know, wake up, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that shows that what we don't understand, we can't just put a label and say this is absolutely 100% wrong, when we know that very simply, when people were denying it in the past, we found out that we were wrong. And we found that out in medical, you know, when there's been so many inventions, or even when penicillin was brought through, and different things in the medical community that have been denied continually. And they've, you know, there's been so many consequences, but yet it finds out down the line that it is true. Do you think the skeptics at some point are going to find out it's just like Christopher Columbus, that, whoa, the world is actually round?
What will happen is that the skeptics will be passed by. That's really how this ends, is the skeptics get simply overwhelmed by reasonable people, looking at the evidence, seeing how the skeptics respond, seeing how the people on the side of parapsychology respond, and going, yeah, the skeptics, they're kind of, you know, a little bit too out there. You know, we're seeing you know, they can't be convinced. So we don't really, we're not jiving with them anymore. And that'll be,
do you think we need them, Craig?
When that becomes the mainstream opinion, then things will sort of shift.
Change. Yeah. Do you think we need skeptics? Do we need
We don't. There's enough skepticism within the parapsychology community, and certainly the having people who just deny everything is not useful to any scientific endeavor. All they're really doing is gumming up the works. What you need is informed skepticism, where people where people understand the process, they understand the details, and then their skepticism is based upon that. Like, for example, if you or I walked into a haunted house and we heard this voice in the background go, "Ooh!" All right. Any reasonable person knows that that's an act.
Yeah, because I've never heard a ghost do that. Or a spirit.
And we know
that
they don't do that.
No, they don't.
Everybody's reasonably well informed about what ghosts actually do and what to expect. So that if we have something like that, we know that it's an anomaly of such high magnitude that we can dismiss it as a paranormal event. That had to be somebody in the background doing that. That had to be a living person mimicking what they thought was a ghost. That's the normal skeptical.
I'm sorry, but let's put that on TV. And entertain the public, and then, you know, that's another show. We'll miss that one out because you'll get so many people believing it. I can see, you know, I can see the issue, but you know, I personally, you know, my opinion is I like skeptics, right? I don't like pseudo skeptics, but I like people to have a skeptical air about them, because I think as well in the PSI community, in the paranormal community, and in afterlife research, there's too much of acceptance of everything. Pareidolia does my head in. It's one of these things that's one of my pet hates, where people see things. I'm like, for God's sake, it's not a man in a cloud, and it's not a man in a wave or in a water or whatever else. So I have a bit of a skeptical thing, but I'm open. I'm open to be proven wrong. I'm open to data that shows me that it's right, or, you know, but I tend to think we need skeptics of a level where it will challenge the data so that we can go further and we can open further. But we don't need pseudo skeptics. We don't need guerrilla skeptics, but we do need skeptical inquiry. And that's something that I think we have to learn to live with, and maybe we need to create, you know, a balance from it. So, you know, when moving on in your book, you know, you decide to tell this story. You've got lots of examples in there. You became, Craig, a massive target yourself. I mean, this book launched your, I won't want to say your parapsychology career, but you made it into the annals of skeptical history with this book. Were you aware that when you wrote this that you were perhaps stirring, you know, you were poking the hornet's nest?
Oh God, yes. Oh yeah. I knew that immediately. When you go after fundamentalists, they come right back after you. I had a, you know, silly attacks on my blog where they'd come in and downvote everything. And of course, there's a rational wiki biography of me where they made it. Yeah, they cast me as a conspiracy theorist, and they claim that I don't know anything about science at all. It's what they have to do in order to maintain their particular mindset. Of course, it's what they call an ad hominem attack. If you can denigrate and dehumanize your opponent, then you don't have to take what they say seriously. And that's what's going on.
And it's quite clear, though, that they can't really come and say that you don't know anything about parapsychology, because you really have studied it for a very, very long time. I mean, it's something that you have been you have a particular passion from. And like anybody, no matter if you're at university or not, you have a PhD, you have a master's, a B, whatever you got, you're still going to be reading the same books, the same literature. You're still going to be taking in the same knowledge. The fact that you're at university or the fact that you're doing something doesn't mean that knowledge is any different. Maybe how you apply it is different within the construct of methodology. But you have, I mean, you do have a very scientific mind, and you've studied it for a long time, and it's very clear in your writing as well.
Well, thank you. Yes, to answer my qualifications here, I am self-taught. That's absolutely correct. About 2008 was when I started, and I began writing about it. And if you write, you have to research, and you have to learn about what you're writing. Mm. And as that progresses and you keep writing more, you're going to get better at the subject. The other part is that I am a licensed general building contractor. And I can tell you, construction, while it's not directly applicable to science, you do have to have a mindset that is favorable to having the proper sort of skepticism. You are not going to talk your way out of a plumbing leak.
No, I love how you put that together. I love how you put that analogy in there. That's so true. Yes, so, absolutely.
So I deal in my professional life with the practical. Nothing gets solved just by theorizing about it. You have to attach something practical to it. You have to have an anchor of practicality to what you're doing.
And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, if you know, one of the things that I found personally about, and this is my own feeling personally about Craig, is when I first started, before I even asked him to come and join us on PDN, and I started reading some of his stuff, and I have to give a big shout out to Tom. It's Tom Ruffles, isn't it? Tom Ruffles, who put us together from the SPR. I read his stuff and I thought, this guy must be Dr. Craig Wheeler. There's no way that he is just, sorry, Craig Wheeler. He's going to kill me when he meets me. Craig Wheeler, am I getting that right? So there's no way. I read your writing and I thought, he is definitely up there with the best of them. So when you read the articles on the magazine and you read anything that he has written, there is a clear academic way of putting it across, which shows that you are no fool. And even in the writing of the book, the writing of the book's quite academic in a way, isn't it?
It is. If you once I got into parapsychology and I started getting into how they operate, I was like, yeah, this is my thing. You know, I have to a certain extent, I found my people.
So you actually found where the hole, where the circle goes in the right hole and not the square in the circle hole.
Yeah, exactly. This suited me, the careful way everybody talks about different subjects and properly qualifies statements when it's necessary, which is something that you don't see from the skeptics and something that you don't see from the true believers of the sci side. I was involved in the New Age movement way back when. That was super popular in the Bay Area here in California. And
yeah, you were a healer, weren't you? You were a psychic healer?
I was, yeah, for a time. And the lack of science involved in it was very off-putting to me. And also I discovered that this was not my crowd because they weren't applying the proper sort of thinking to what they were doing. You can't just come up with an unprovable theory and go, well, here we are. That does not work for me.
Yeah, I'm tend a bit like that with mediumship and things as well. And when people start talking about fairies and things like that, I tend to get a little bit of, well, you know, where's the scientific proof? And sometimes I get accused of being too scientific in the work that I do. But I think it's something that we definitely need, because even if we can't understand something, it doesn't stop us keep researching until we make a connection. Right. And I love how you do that.
Well, yeah, thank you. And exactly, a theory has to be disprovable, and it has to provide reasonable explanations for other things. If all your theory does is satisfy your emotional needs, good for you. But this is not going to help anybody else. Your theory has to be basically disprovable. It has to be somewhat evidence-based, and it has to provide an avenue for explaining other things as they come up. And if a theory doesn't...
Yeah, you said my favorite buzzword, evidence. You said my favorite buzzword there, Craig, evidence, 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 evidence.
Yeah.
There has to be evidence of everything.
Yeah.
Now, will you write a sequel to this? Do you think you're going to bring out a sequel to PSI Wars?
I feel like I told the story as much as I needed to, and that most of the additional writing is coming from the scientific community, because what I basically did with the book was I opened the door and I showed the skeptics in a different light to the scientific community and informed them as to what they were actually facing. So at this point, nobody has to guess. Before I had put this part forward, most of the dialogue around skepticism was, well, look, they said this thing and they're wrong. They said this other thing and they're wrong. And they did this other thing and they're wrong. And, you know, here's all the evidence to support our point of view. And what I did with the book was I said, hey, look, this skepticism is a form of extremism. And they are going to behave like extremists. And it's simply not an evidence-based discussion. It's more of a PR campaign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and once I put that out there, then the conversation has been slowly changing over the years. Particularly, Professor Cardenia, in particular, put out two very important, influential papers. One of them was kind of a leap off from my book, detailing all the different ways that parapsychology research is sabotaged. His paper was more complete than my book. He simply had more stories to draw upon. And the other one was a defense of parapsychological research, all in one neat, tidy paper. And
that's maybe we can link that actually in the show notes as well, in the description. And that's a really nice segue into something that we are both passionate about, is parapsychology and science within, you know, the spiritual PSI community, is that we are trying now to, I mean, your book is the catalyst to change, is what I see. And now we are trying to educate the general public on the realities of PSI, the realities of the science out there, and giving our parapsychologists a voice. And which brings me into something that we were supposed to have a big conference last year, and COVID and everything all just put everything tits up, basically. But we came with the idea that we're developing an online conference in 2022. Craig, myself, some other people putting this together. And we've got some amazing speakers who are coming to speak about PSI, the paranormal, spiritual community. That's something that I'm very excited about. And that's something you're excited about as well, Craig, because we're finally starting to get somewhere with getting good information out there. I mean, your articles are doing fantastic on the magazine. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, for all you parapsychologists out there that are even at university and studying psychology and looking at parapsychology, get in touch with Craig. If you've got an article, if you've got something, if you've got a theory, if you've got a hypothesis that you want to put out there, get in touch with Craig. He's our man in PDN, and he will look at your stuff and get it out there and get it published, because we want everybody to have a fair crack at the whip. So we've got some good things coming up, Craig, haven't we?
I'm looking forward to this. This is a lot of fun for me. And the particularly important part is that for parapsychology to get over the hump, so to speak, the what it will need is advocates within the community,
yeah.
not just a couple people here and there, but many of them. A lot of people advocating for parapsychology and pushing against the incorrect elements of the skepticism, where they are putting out either disinformation or incorrect information, depending upon how they roll. Those people pushing back against skepticism are the ones going to make the difference. You can't just have a few people; it has to be a crowd. And this is what we hope educating people on what parapsychology really is will accomplish.
And you know, it's interesting because I received a couple of emails in the last couple of days, which is, and I haven't spoke to you about this, but I'm going to, you know, mention it now, from PDN and from in my own network, we say, look, can you put us in touch with so-and-so? Can you put us in touch with this person who does parapsychology in this state? Because we want to be more scientific in the work that we do as paranormal investigators or as investigating PSI. So I think, you know, we're starting to make an impact. There's, if one person comes and asks, there's no reason why, as more and more education goes out there, Craig, that we can have thousands of people coming and asking to be more professional, to understand the science more. And this is, and I think, you know, I thank you for writing this book, because this has been the precursor to hopefully a support structure for parapsychology and moving forward. And I think that's absolutely amazing.
That was one of the things that I hoped to accomplish in writing the book, was I could see that the whole thing at this point was more of a PR campaign than anything else. Mm. Parapsychology is proven as much as anything can be proven in science. And psychic ability, for all intents and purposes, has been scientifically shown to be real. So it's no longer a scientific debate. It's really a PR campaign at this point to sell the world on the fact that this science is not what the skeptics claim it to be.
And absolutely, and that's something that we're starting to do. Craig, I want to thank you for joining me on Deadly Departed. This has been awesome. And obviously, you're going to come back again. You're heavily involved with us in the magazine as well. And there's lots and lots of more things that we're bringing up. We've got a new magazine coming out called Parawise, which is going to be more academic and educational for the general public as well. Some amazing stuff that we've got coming up. Craig, what's your last thought for the viewers and the listeners out there? What have you got to say to them?
For the average person looking into psychic ability, sometimes it can be a little unnerving to have psychic experiences, particularly if they're strong ones. And people, it's natural to wonder, is this real? And am I going crazy? And the answer is usually no. What I've had to tell a lot of people is that there are many psychic experiences out there. And you might be experiencing something that's not generally well known, but it doesn't mean you're the only one. And there are, in fact, a lot of people experiencing having psychic experiences, and you're normal. Everything is fine.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So, ladies and gentlemen, just one last thing. If you want to connect with Craig, then connect with him on Paranormal Daily News or even in his Quora group, where you go and find them on Parapsych, just called Parapsychology. And go and buy the book. It's an investment. It's an investment in your knowledge. It's an investment in your understanding of PSI. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm excited about the future for academic advancement and blending, creating that bridge between science and spirit. It really does excite me. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for joining, Craig. This has been absolutely awesome. Next week, we have got another guest. I'm glad that I'm now finally bringing out guests because I figured that you guys were a bit bored listening to me. So we've got some great guests coming up. And we have got fantastic. We have got Elliot Van Dousen, who's a PhD as a doctor in Canada and an ex-cop. He will be talking to him. Next week, we'll be getting Rupert on here as well, and we've got some great speakers for the conference, which we are announcing. It's going to be April the 1st and the 2nd, 2022. Keep in touch with us. Yeah, we will be launching the page and a sign up page very soon. It'll be a little bit of a fundraiser to help parapsychology go further and to support projects. So we look forward to it. On behalf of myself and Craig, thank you and God bless.
You've been listening to Deadly Departed with renowned evidential medium and author Jock Brocas.
Jock Brocas.
If you like what you've heard, make sure to pick up a copy of the Deadly Departed book. Don't forget to share the episodes and send in your questions to us about anything paranormal and the afterlife. Tune in next time to Deadly Departed, the do's, don'ts, and dangers of afterlife communication.